Welcome to A Great Day for Hockey Talk, brought to you by our founding partner, PPG, official paint of the Penguins. Here's Paul Steigerwald.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome once again to It's a Great Day for Hockey Talk, Episode 1 of the 2019-20 season, brought to you by PPG. I'm Paul Steigerwald, and it was my pleasure to have a conversation with Sergei Gonchar, the Geno Whisperer, if you will. Not only just Geno, maybe all the defensemen, too. The defenseman whisperer for the Pittsburgh Penguins, Sergei Gonchar. You know what? If you open the dictionary to the word gentleman, his picture would be in there. This guy is the gentleman's gentleman and one of the really nice people I've ever met in hockey. And I know everybody else in the Penguins organization would say the same thing. He has been a tremendous help to the young defenseman on this Penguin team. He talks very softly and carries a very big stick, and did for 20 years in the National Hockey League, recording 811 points, 220 goals, 1,301 career regular season games, the most points among Russian-born blue liners in NHL history. And that's just an amazing number for him, 811. He won the Stanley Cup, of course, with the Penguins in 09, played in the final in 08. In 09, he came back from an injury. That was the year that Michael Therrien was fired and Dan Bylsma replaced him, and he came back right around the same time as that coaching change and helped the Penguins to that incredible run all the way to the Stanley Cup. What a great guy Sergei Gonchar is, and it was my pleasure to have this conversation with him. Sergei, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on our podcast. We really appreciate it. I want to take you all the way back, if we can, to, you were born April 13th, 1974, in a place called Chelyabinsk in Russia. Could you tell us about Chelyabinsk, what the terrain is like, what the town was like, what living there was like?
Oh, it's a big industrial city with a lot of factories, and it's up north, so it's a little chilly in the winter, long winter, so perfect climate for hockey. You know, we would, and our city is actually well known for hockey school, especially in the days when I was growing up. Our town had, I would say, more than 10 hockey schools that we were able to play against each other. So,
wow.
Which is really nice, yeah. So every weekend we can have a game and play against each other and not travel much. So it was, it was very good. And we have a lot of guys came out of that school that playing on the different levels. You know, the guy that you probably know, it's Sergei Makarov. He was from there. It's probably our biggest name. So Kuznetsov is from there, the younger guy. So there was a lot of guys came through the school and they become a good players on different levels. So, you know, I grew up playing hockey pretty much every day. Winter was long. Sometimes they would cancel the school and would still go outside. They canceled school because of the weather, because it was a bit too cold, and would still go outside and play because, you know, we all love it so much.
When you say cold, how cold?
Usually they cancel the school when it's like minus 30 Celsius. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess it gets that way up sometimes up in Manitoba, but not very often. When you talk about the schools, were they the kind of school where you went to school and then you played, or was it strictly hockey? You know, because I've heard the stories about the schools. I know in the Czech Republic a lot of guys went to those, and also in Russia, where you went to school, class for part of the day, and the other part of the day you might be playing hockey.
The way it worked in our club is that at the younger age, we were going to different schools and we're just practicing together. Usually in the afternoon, but when we got older, I would say when we got to the fifth or sixth grade, they put us in the same class, so it was easy for us to travel, so the school can accommodate, you know, our schedule, and, you know, let us go once in a while and skip maybe the day of school here and there, and when we come back, we have a couple extra hours every day to catch up. So that's the way it was set up with us. And, you know, the school was affiliated with the local professional team. So when we got older, some of us, they had a chance to play with the farm team. And then who was good, they were playing for the big club, and it was actually very well set up system. You know, a lot of kids have a chance to play hockey because we have free equipment and free ice, and we have to pay for coaches and everything. So, no, as long as you want to play hockey, they give you opportunity.
Do you remember your first exposure to hockey, or when you first thought, "Hey, this is something I'd really like to do"?
To be honest with you, I think we all want to play hockey back home. Was something that you know, everybody have done, and everybody around you have been doing. It's probably similar to Minnesota, or you know, one of those northern states here, like Michigan, when kids, you know, pretty much everybody playing hockey growing up. For us, it was even probably more because we didn't have a you know, baseball or football, so we only focused on hockey. So at some point, I mean, in the very beginning, I was thinking to maybe play soccer, but my father told me that you know, the hockey program is better, and you know, and not the fastest guy on the team, so probably better focus on hockey. So I ended up playing hockey, and my focus was on hockey since I probably was like 8.
So were you aware of Sergei Makarov? Like, was he like a hero to the people in your town because he had gone and, you know, played for the Red Army and was involved in so many big series, and they, of course, had an incredibly successful team?
Yes, of course. And another good thing about the system we had access to pretty much every game local that the local pro club was playing. So when any team come and plays against our team, we would always be at the stands watching those games. And Sergei was coming in, playing for the Red Army, and you not only know, you know, him from, you know, TV and all those super series, but you actually see him live, you know, during those practices, and coach was able to take us there as well. So we were watching their practices, we were watching their games. So it was, for us growing up, small young kids in small town, was really special. Not small town, but like in our community, it was very special.
Mm-hmm. You said the club there, was that Tractor Chelyabinsk?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And what's Tractor? Is that a big industry there?
Yeah, they make tractors, yes.
I figured that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did your dad work for that company, or what did your dad do while you were growing up and learning the game?
He was a welder, and my mom worked for the telephone company.
Hmm. So was he a big hockey fan too? Like, did he you know, encourage you and that kind of thing?
He never played himself. He likes the sport. He likes to watch it. Yeah, I would call him a fan, but he wasn't a WAF growing up. He was doing cross-country skiing a little bit, but nothing, you know, on a serious level.
What exposure to the National Hockey League did you have as a young guy there in Chelyabinsk?
We didn't have much, to be honest with you. Only chance that we had to see NHL is when our teams, like Red Army, for example, will go and play a couple of the little super series, they call them, when they play against them, or, I don't know, friendly series when they play during around Christmas time. So that's pretty much it. But then, you know, obviously 1987, the Canada Cup was there, but it's the only time we can see NHL players. I mean, very few of them came and played World Championship back then, so we didn't see, you know, that many of it.
I would think that because hockey was such a big part of the culture in Chelyabinsk, that you had an advantage in terms of being able to play a lot of your young developing career right there in your backyard, as opposed to having to move hundreds and thousands of miles away maybe to play in a more competitive environment. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are. You know, as I said, we had like more than 10 local clubs that we can play against. And within a few hours of driving, we had another 4 or 5 teams. So, you know, for us, there was always a competition. So, plus, when you're getting to the age when you, 14, 15, you start playing those, like a national championships, and you qualify for them, then you're playing them. Plus, you're playing all the local clubs during the weekend. So there is a lot of hockey. You know, looking back, I'm thinking there is a lot of hockey for us to play. But at the same time, you know, our system was a little different. We had a lot of time to practice. We usually would have like 4 or 5 practices a week, so we can actually have a chance to work on our skills. Because I know over here, guys not practicing as much. They, you know, do it once or twice a week, and they play games on weekends. So for us, I guess, so the difference was that we had a chance to develop our skills, you know, develop our skating, stick handling, all those little details, which are important, you know, while we were practicing.
Did you feel as though, Sergei, looking back on it now, that you were part of something that was unique in the sense that, you know, we look back at the way the Russians played the game, it was different than the way they were playing in North America. Were there a lot of the same approaches and tactics and things like that that the Russians took that we've become familiar with over the years? Were they ingrained in the way that you were brought up to as a hockey player in Chelyabinsk?
Yes. It came, you know, as I said, from those practices. You're working a lot on your skills, a lot of little games when you're developing your hockey sense. You know, they give and go games. You know, it was a system that developed those that kind of skill, you know, in the player. So, and you know, you have to remember that we would be on the ice, but then we off the ice would have a. We didn't have workouts in the sense that we have them now when people lifting the weights, but we would have after the ice or maybe even before the ice, we would go and we would play soccer, we would play, you know, basketball, we would do a little bit of workout in a sense, like we would do a little push-up, sit-up. So we probably didn't develop our strength as much back then. But we were focusing on another part of the game. When you're working on your skills, we're working on, you know, as I said, on your hockey senses, and you develop those every day by playing those games.
Dry land training is what the first thing. I mean, I remember seeing we still see it in the Red Army movie. You see the old dry land training that the Soviets did that weren't being done. That was not being done over here at that time. Did you always want to be a defenseman, Sergei, or were you a forward at one time?
No, I want to be forward. I've been told I'm too slow to play forward. Standy. Yeah.
Too slow.
Yeah, when I was young, yeah, I didn't skate as well, and you know, it took me a while to get going. To be honest with you, I was one of those kids who, you know, didn't skate as well at the early ages, and I had to make my reads to make up for it. So I guess I developed that, you know, sense of reading the game and being in the right spot because I was forced to. My skating wasn't that good, and took me, I would say maybe like 16, 17, that late I started skating better. But before that, I wasn't, you know, good of a skater, and I had to work a lot to improve it.
You were about 13 years old when the Canada Cup occurred in 87, and Mario and company were playing in that series. It was incredible hockey. You mentioned it. And then you were drafted in 92. Right when the Penguins and Mario were winning the Stanley Cup. Were you aware of the Penguins throughout that stretch there when Mario kind of probably made a pretty big impact, I would think, on Russian hockey fans?
I should say that Mario put Pittsburgh on the map. I mean, like when he started playing for them, you know, people started recognizing that city, that team more and more. I mean, he's the guy who brought all the attention to them, and obviously, you know, Jagr follow up, you know, and they start winning. So, you know, yeah, back when I was growing up, you know, I didn't hear much about that, but when he started playing for Pittsburgh and, you know, and then he came and played for that Canada Cup, you know, we all, I mean, knew that he's playing in Pittsburgh, he's making all those records, and so, yeah. Pittsburgh was recognized after he started playing for Pittsburgh and after he started, you know, breaking those records.
So you end up being drafted by the Capitals. You go to the capital of the United States, the Washington Capitals. You're a Russian player. I would say still in the earlier days of the Russians playing in the NHL. I mean, only a year before the Penguins won that 92 Cup, the year you were drafted, Slava Fetisov was playing for the Devils. They had only been a few years into a stretch where they had, you know, Fetisov and Kasatanov and Krutov, and then, of course, Larionov and Makarov came into the league. And I'm just wondering if, you know, when you started to play in Washington, how difficult was it for you from a cultural standpoint, you know, to learn the language and to fit in, if you will?
So, as you said, like, it was difficult. You know, it's not only the language. You have to also consider the fact that I grew up in a different system. Like, if you think about it, we didn't have a credit cards, right? We didn't have a checkbooks. We didn't have, you know, all those things that you guys growing up with. So, like, when I got here, I had to go to the bank and open up my own account and get my credit card and debit card. And obviously, you don't speak English at that time. In Washington, try to help as much as I can, and they did. But in the same time, you're going to the store, you're making the payment first time, or you're trying to figure out what you're buying, what's on the shelf. And so all those things that, you know, comes, you know, to you when you're young, you know, we didn't have anything back then. Like, so you have to learn all those things. You have to know them. I mean, learn about them. So it takes a while, you know, to start feeling comfortable. On the other hand, I don't think the hockey was a problem for me. At least I actually felt better here on this smaller ice surfaces, because the game is more intense and you're more involved, and you know the action is always going on. Plus, I think hockey, it's easy to adjust. I mean, the kind of a universal language, you understand, you know, how the game is playing, and you know, obviously there is difference here and there, but you know, you're making those adjustments and you're playing, and that part was kind of, you know, I don't know, I shouldn't say easy, but it was easier to adjust probably than the lifestyle and, you know, the language and, you know, all that stuff.
Well, we're going to get to Gino in a minute, but like, I look at Gino, he had the benefit of having you to lean on. Who did you lean on in Washington? Anybody?
Peter Bondra was there. He spoke Russian. Dmitry Kristich was there. He helped me a bit. So, yeah, there was a few guys, and, you know, I was a young guy, and Peter and Dmitry, they both had families, and it was a little, maybe they didn't spend as much time with me, but when I need anything and I ask for help, they always did help me.
When did you meet your wife to be, Xenia?
I met her in 1998 in Japan, in Nagano.
And she was skating, I assume, there?
Yeah, she was a figure skater for Armenia, and, you know, we met at the last day of the Olympic Games and start talking, and
rest is history.
Now we're married. Yeah, rest is history.
And she was a fantastic skater, I take it? Like, you must have been enthralled with that, I would think.
She was a good skater. She was on the way to maybe become a better skater, and you know, then I show up and she got married, and she didn't probably reach her full potential. She was very young and back then, and you know, in the figure skating, you have to, in any sport, I should say, you have to put a few years in to get to the highest level, and you know, she was very young and she was on the way there, but I don't know if it's unfortunately for sports, but definitely fortunate for me that she stopped skating and we got married, and now we have a great family.
I'll say she's one of the nicest people I've ever met in hockey. I just want to make sure I tell you that, because I think she's incredibly lovely.
Thank you.
She's a really, really lovely person, like one of the nicest people I've met in the Penguins organization. You came to Pittsburgh as a free agent in 05, Sid's rookie season. And as I recall, it was not an easy transition for you in Pittsburgh that year. It was you know, the Penguins weren't a good team yet. There were, you know, there was promise because of Sid being here and all, but as I recall, it wasn't the best of times in your career in terms of that first year.
Yeah. I agree with you. You know, it was not an easy transaction. I think like the team was a little bit in a transition too, you know, like a couple of young, a couple new faces came into the club, not only me. If, you know, John LeClerc was signed, Ziggy Palfi, you know, like there was a few people, more than like one or two guys who were signed that summer. Sid came in and, you know, it took us a little longer than everyone would be, than everyone expected to get a chemistry. And that's why I think it was a slow start for me. You know, I didn't, it took me a while to get used to new partners and in the city. And but I tell you, I would say like second half of the season, you know, when I start feeling comfortable again, you know, everything get back on track.
I'll say, and then the next year, you made quick progress. You guys made the playoffs, and you know, Gino came along that year. So I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't get right into that right now. I mean, obviously, you were a tremendous benefit to Evgeny Malkin when he came to Pittsburgh on so many levels. What do you remember about those early days and just taking Gino under your wing?
What do I remember? I remember that the first time, I mean, first of all, I have to say that I met him earlier, right?
That's right. You played in Magnitogorsk. That's right.
Yeah,
right,
we
right.
played together. So I knew him a bit. I knew he's a great guy, you know, shy person with great hockey talent. But as I said, like, I mean, first of all, from to me, he was like a great person. And, you know, the reason that I invited him to live in my house is because I knew he's a great guy and, you know, it's not going to be a problem, you know, bring him under my roof. So, and he came, you know, it was an easy adjustment for all of us. I mean, for me, it was a little easier because I knew him, but, you know, also for my wife and my daughter, you know, everybody felt comfortable. And so it was an easy transaction for all of us.
And the winner is Evgeny Malkin.
Easy to me if I read my last speech again. But I'm lost, sorry. I won't say just one thing. I remember when I come to U.S. 6 years before, it's different language. I'm not speak a lot, you know. It's different life and different game. It's not easy. And one guy who always support me all 6 years and still best friend, and I won't give this trophy to him, and his name is Sergei Gonchar. He's my best friend right now, and always together, and one day I'm glad one day I meet him. Thank you.
Boy, he's come a long way as far as the language and in just adjusting, as you said, to the culture and the various aspects of life. I mean, you know, not that we didn't know that he would, because he's a very intelligent person too, and he cares deeply about, you know, making sure that he fits in. But I just wonder if you've been kind of amazed at just, you know, how his life has unfolded here with his own son now and just the way things have kind of gone for Gino since you first started living with him, or he living with you.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time ago, and over those years, I mean, he matured, he became a great hockey player, you know. But I think deep inside, he's still the same guy. Nothing has changed. I think, you know, all that success and fame change him much, you know. He's a great guy to be around, always making jokes and having fun. So, and he's more, much more he's not as serious as people think. Like he's,
I think we've seen that. We've been able to find that out over the course of time. But I know what you mean. He is serious, but we know that he has a great sense of humor. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel it's good, you guys. He doesn't speak English as well. You know, otherwise, he'll be making fun of everybody.
Well, we'll get George Berman to do some translating for us, maybe, and he can
maybe
maybe not. So anyway, you know, you and Gino get together as, you know, teammates, and you go on, and in 08, you go to the Stanley Cup Final. That doesn't, you know, end well, but it sets you up for the next year, and then you get hurt in training camp. That was horrible. David Krejci hit you, which was really ridiculous. I mean, he was trying to prove something and, you know, in a training camp game that he wanted to make the team, so he hammered you. You end up with a bad shoulder injury. Boy, that was a tough injury to come back from, and what a year that was. I mean, highs and lows for you, I would think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was working hard that summer, you know, preparing myself for the training camp, and, you know, going into the game, going into that camp, I thought that I'm ready and, you know, I'm in good shape and I'm going to have a good year. And then, you know, that injury happened, you know, the first shift of the game, you know, with that late hit after, you know, I moved the puck and I got hit 5 seconds later. I was obviously frustrated because I knew it's a serious one and I had to go through the surgery to get it fixed. But at the same time, you know, it happened. What happened has happened. You can really turn the things around. I mean, change things,
yes.
Change the past. So, I focus on my rehab, you know. Mark helped me a lot with my rehab. I spent like 4 months months in the gym every day doing things, working on my shoulder. And then thanks to him. I don't know if Mark going to listen to this, but I would say thank you on the radio.
Mark Bortland, you mean, yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad he was there to help you. And then, of course, you did come back right around the same day that Michael Therrien was dismissed. You guys went on that incredible run, and I'm kind of going fast forward here because I want to make sure we get to some other topics. But I just wanted to mention that, you know, then you're getting back in a groove, and then Alexander Ovechkin hits you knee-to-knee in the opening round, and now you're out again. What were your thoughts at that time about what your chances of coming back were? To us, we were really worried. But then you came back by Game 7. But what were you thinking at the time about your chances of coming back?
I mean, when it just happened, obviously, you're very frustrated because, you know, you just had a surgery. You know, it's a playoff. You want to be out there and help the team. But you know, next day, I recognize, you know, I can live with that. I can, you know, skate, walk with it. So it was like, wow, it's a surprise to me. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. So another day went by, and then I stepped on the ice and made a few laps. And it's, well, I can actually maybe even using that brace and skate with that. So, you know, it was very fortunate, I guess, that I was able to adjust to that pain and damage and play with that. You know, sometimes you can't do this. You know, you're turning and you're losing your balance, and, you know, you're going into the bottle, and then your leg is not strong enough. But the injury was in the spot where it kind of not limited my abilities. I mean, of course it's limited, but it's not to the point I was not going to be able to be there. So I guess it's a good thing that had happened to me. And obviously it's an injury, and you don't want to be injured. But at the same time, you know, when the injury happened and it gives you that ability to, you know, to perform, maybe not in the highest level of yours, but, you know, to the level that you can help the team, you're obviously taking that opportunity in the playoffs, and you're going right back in.
I remember you scoring a goal. It looked like Bob Airey said something about you being on one leg. It was like you adjusted. It's amazing.
Using the right skate to get the puck to the stick and shuffling it by Varlamov. Now look at, he doesn't use his right skate, the right leg to shoot that puck, Gonchar. It was his right knee that was injured. Watch, he shoots it just all with the left leg. Look, no weight on the right leg at all. That tells me he's still injured.
So you win the series, and did you take any particular glee in eliminating Alexander Ovechkin at that time?
I don't know. It just, to me, it was, that we won, yeah. You know, it's what happened, it happened. I just focus on us moving forward, and, you know, and you're beating them, but you're not winning the Stanley Cup.
No, you're not.
and we were in the finals last year, so we end up.
Yes.
You know, you don't want to end up in the same spot again, so you focus actually on winning the cup, not beating the Washington Capitals.
Well, there have been a couple of cups for the Penguins since, but you won that cup in 09, Sergei, and I would think that that would be the pinnacle right now for your career, right?
Yes. I mean, I don't think people recognize how hard it is. I mean, if you think about it, you're playing for 82 games plus the preseason, and then playoff starts, and the game goes to another level. I mean, like, you've been around, you've seen those games. I mean, the closer you're getting to the finals, the tougher and tougher the game is, and takes a lot of energy out of you, and, you know, every second of the game is so important, and, you know, it's I think it's one of the hardest trophies to win, and you know, I was very fortunate to win one here in Pittsburgh.
And we couldn't have done it without you, Sergei. That's for sure. Before we go, I want to, you know, just mention that you know, you are the highest scoring goal scoring Russian defenseman in the history of the game. You know, Sergei Zubov is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame this fall. Why should I not think, and Penguins fans and all fans of hockey think, that someday you're going to get that call? Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, whatever is going to happen, it's happened. I mean, it would be nice, obviously. But, you know, I just focus on the team right now and trying to help those young kids to get better, you know, hopefully win another cup.
I'm amazed at the things that you can impart. Like, one thing that I love that you did, Sergei, the way you brought the puck off the wall on the right side, because you're a left shot, you had ability to bring it to the middle, which a lot of guys can't do. When the puck would come out to you, you were on your backhand a lot, and yet you figured out a way to keep that puck in and just like so seamlessly transition it from coming to you along the wall, bringing it into the middle. And then, of course, you could make those beautiful, perfect passes to Letang for those one-timers. I mean, those are things that – can you teach that? I mean, is there stuff there that you can help our young defensemen with?
I'm trying to teach them. I mean, I try to share my knowledge with them in any way I can, in any situation. I mean, the playing in a blue line is one thing that I'm working with our guys who was on a power play. I don't know, to me it was one of those things that when you're talking about that particular play, it came kind of naturally. I don't know, it's just one of those things that I don't know, I just get the puck and it just happened.
Yes.
I never thought about it. I actually start thinking about this more when I become a coach. Because, like, you want to deliver message to the guys, right? You want to explain them what happened and how it happened and, you know, and try to teach them to do this, right? So, and then you start thinking more about it. Then you're thinking about your body position, you know, how you position yourself, how you open up, how you, you know, handling the puck and all that stuff. So I think, like, that particular play, since it was a little bit more natural to me, I didn't think much about it. But then when I become a coach, I start looking at our guys and how they're doing this stuff. I start, you know, analyzing, you know, walking the blue line more and explaining to our guys.
That's interesting. Breaking down your own game to be able to then teach it to someone else. It's really cool. It's really great. I've heard great stories about how much you use video and everything. Just mention one thing I did notice you working on with Marcus Pettersson was that half slapper, like less of a windup. That looked like something that could help him.
Yeah, I think it would help any D on our team, because if you think about it, the higher you bring in your stick, you know, the longer the stick is traveling to the ice, the more time that forward has to get in the lane and, you know, or put the stick and forecheck the puck. So I think now games are so fast, a lot of times you don't have that much time to make that shot. So I'm trying to work with Marcus and some of our other guys to have that quick release and deliver puck to the net.
Okay, before you go, I just want to ask you one question. You're a cultured guy, Sergei. I've always been impressed with the fact that you have interests outside of hockey. Do you still love classical music? I remember you going to St. Petersburg and you talked about how beautiful it was there. And do you like you know, to listen to classical music and stuff?
Yeah. I do. I just you know, you have to be in the mood for it. And once in a while, I I listen something different. I listen everything pretty much, and classical music as a part of it, yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us. I knew it would be very interesting. It is to me, and I hope the fans enjoyed our conversation as well.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Sergei Gonchar. Let's all hope that he does get that call for the Hockey Hall of Fame. This has been It's a Great Day for Hockey Talk. I'm Paul Steigerwald, and our thanks to PPG for bringing you our podcast.